Rim. Shamrim means guard, and it's basically a private Jewish police force that operates globally. We're watching as Sky News is on patrol with them. If we can bring up Caitlin Johnson's tweet, I thought she hit the nail on the head here. I don't want to read it. She says, Sky News ran a segment about how a Jewish volunteer group is on the streets fighting record levels of anti-Semitism, and zero anti-Semitism occurs anywhere in the entire segment. It's just a group of thugs cruising around intimidating non-Jews by impersonating law enforcement. Bing. Yep, she nailed it. She nailed it. Bingo. That's exactly what this is. So let's go back to the, I don't know, Jewish cosplayers driving around responding to basically paranoid outrages by the Jewish community, who are not under any threat, but apparently are constantly calling Shamrim to come help them. Crazy. Let's watch.
So afterwards, the preliminary is that it's an electrical fault.
Electrical fault.
The stress, they've just been...
So, okay, let's pause it. Let's pause it. What he just said there, there was a fire, I guess, in their community, and they said the number of calls to Shamrim exploded. They came full. So literally, there's an electric fire, and he just admitted, he's like, well, yeah, it turned out to be just like an electrical thing. Remember what I just said? It wasn't arson, wasn't a synagogue, wasn't an attack. It's the exact same thing. That's what they're talking about. They're like, they're on heightened alert ever since the anti-Semitic arson attack on the synagogue, by which, of course, we mean the electrical fire on the place near the synagogue. And so they're being flooded with calls of people going, we're under attack. They're burning our synagogue down. And it's literally just like, you mean the house down the road that had the electrical fire? We're on it, ma'am. Back to the paranoid freaks.
Tempers are flaring at the side of the road.
There's nothing wrong in public reporting.
A Jewish man has been accused of taking pictures of a Muslim cleric, which he denies.
Do you think that some people who aren't Jewish feel a little bit intimidated by the Shamrim?
Absolutely not. We, across board, are called by anyone. You don't have to be Jewish to call us.
Perhaps some members of the Muslim community might feel a bit awkward when you show up. I mean, how do you think that might...
We just spoke to them imam over there, and he was very happy to speak to us and very happy that we diffused the situation.
All this in just over an hour in one part of London. Volunteers doing their bit to try to keep a lid on simmering community tensions and record levels of anti-Semitism.
All of that in just an hour. I mean, my God, it's overwhelming. Clearly they need tens of millions of dollars of British taxpayer money. Thank goodness they're getting it from Keir Starmer, right? I mean, Jewish guys were stabbed, Muslim guys were stabbed too, but hey, the synagogue got caught on fire, okay? We're just going to run with that. We're going to use that as a basis for deciding other things, even though it is untrue in the first place. But hey, it was an anti-Semitic attack, and obviously, when there's an attack against an identity like that, the only thing the British government can do is give their private police force tens of millions of dollars, allow them to carry weapons, promise to use every power capable of the government to benefit the beautiful Jewish people. Of course, when it's a white person that it happens to, you will go to jail. You will go to jail for saying something should happen. The Jewish community gets stabbed. They get tens of millions of dollars. They get, you know, to run a fake police force. But when a white person dies, you will go to jail for saying anything like that should happen for you. Okay, how dare you? And yeah, it is an international force. Brooklyn Safety Patrol. No, they call themselves the Safety Patrol in Brooklyn. Brooklyn Jewish thugs sentenced to 17 years for abusing girl. Jacob Daskal, head of Private Orthodox Crime Patrol, called Shamrim, by the way, they don't mention it in the headline because they want it to continue. Took a 15-year-old runaway to his upstate home. Her family thought he was helping. Well, what do you know? What a shocking development, I say. After a 15-year-old girl had run away from her Brooklyn home in 2017, her relatives turned to help to a trusted figure, Jacob Daskal, head of a private crime patrol called the Borough Park Shamrim Society. The girl's aunt and uncle asked Mr. Daskal to help find her niece a place to live, and he offered his summer home in upstate New York.
I'll start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay? Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
TheAlexJonesShow.com.
Something's messed up in our system. Usually the song kicks in towards the end of a segment. So if I'm not looking at the clock, I know it's coming. But the last two times it hasn't gone off. So I end up, I'm covering a story and I look up and I realize we're a minute into a break. So I don't even know where I got off there. I'm sorry. We're too into the stories. We're paying too much attention to what's going on because it's all so unbelievably insane. So yeah, I don't know if y'all did the, did y'all hear about that last story? Shamrim leader in Brooklyn kidnaps a girl and takes her to upstate New York and threatens to handcuff her and tells her, I'm a really big guy, I'm protected by the police, and if you try to expose me, it'll only go badly for you. It sounds like he's a member of a mob of some sort. It sounds like he's a member of some sort of Jewish mafia that has connections with the police force that run these private militias that they apparently use to kidnap and rape little girls. That's crazy, right? How crazy is that? Sir, they just upped it to DEFCON 3. Watch out, Kanye. Shamrim's coming to get you. The community guards, the beautiful, lovely, despicable scumbag guards. American YouTuber Tyler Oliveira was harassed by Shamrim police in New Jersey. The Shamrim are a Jewish police force funded by the taxpayer. We are being policed by a secondary form of law enforcement. This is insane. Well, the insane thing about it is that he didn't do anything wrong. See, the police are actually police, and they don't respond to non-crimes. The Shamrim aren't actually police, and they respond to whatever they want to. See how that works? They're under no obligation to actually, you know, stop crime. I don't know if they have the ability to stop crime anyway. They are just, you know, Jewish intimidation. They are a Jewish militia that's there to make sure, you know, I guess you don't expose them. Like Tyler Oliveira going to New Jersey and trying to film fraud going on is not illegal. The police wouldn't show up for that. Shamrim does, though. And they present themselves as police. They present themselves as law enforcement, and they are apparently taxpayer funded. There's more. As anti-Semitism rises in the UK, Shamrim volunteers help protect Jewish communities. Brooklyn private Jewish patrols wield power. Some call them bullies. Well, some anti-Semites, maybe. Some vicious anti-Semites. That'll be illegal soon. Don't worry about that. I don't know why anybody puts up with it. Like, so just think about it. In the UK, the Jews have Shamrim. The Sikhs are allowed to carry giant knives around. The Muslims basically act as if they are above the law and are routinely caught with mosques literally jammed full of weaponry, but they're never punished for it, never held to account for it. You are literally arming and giving license to act freely to everybody except for white people. White people, on the other hand, are being thrown into prison for 5 years for throwing a traffic cone into the air. So, armed revolution. I think armed revolution is the only answer here. I'm looking through history and, yep, turns out the only way this gets fixed is by overthrowing your government. The good news is you still operate under this sort of archaic system called monarchy. which is kind of like a game that you can win. You know, Game of Thrones, because whoever gets the throne gets to lead. Shamrim leader pleads guilty to bribing cops for gun permits. I mean, I'm shocked. Oh my God, you're telling me that the volunteer Jewish police force is consistently and routinely caught in illegal activity? What? What are you talking about? Are you telling me that these Jewish police officers, these fake Jewish police officers, are you telling me they're anything but the most upstanding and moral people, that they're motivated by something other than genuine concern for safety and peace of all people? How dare you? How dare you suggest that all the evidence we've presented makes that conclusion abundantly clear? How dare you? Okay? There's one thing I know. It's that arming Jewish people and giving them license to act over and above everybody else, that always turns out well. That always goes really well, and there's never been a negative consequence to that type of activity. So keep it up. It's good. I'm in favor of it, okay? I want to see more Shamrim. I want to replace our regular police with Shamrim. Let's replace ICE with Shamrim. Let's just give over our military to Israel. Let's give over our police force to Israel. I think they should be allowed to patrol as they see fit, and I think we should only have one law. I think you shouldn't be allowed to be anti-Semitic. I think everything else is kind of fine, okay? Murder, who cares, right? Rape, it happens to everyone. Get over it, okay? Anti-Semitism, opposing the actions of the police, that's the only crime, okay? Should be the only crime. It's the only sin, actually. Ten Commandments is passé. All that's passé. Pornography is great and good and amazing and wonderful. Homosexuality should be embraced by every little child. Transgenderism, all that stuff. It's not sinful. It's good and wonderful. The only sin that exists is to oppose Jewish people, okay? It's the only sin. It should be the only law, as far as I'm concerned. Good is submission to Jews. Bad is opposing Jews. That is the moral delineation that our country was founded on, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I read that in the Declaration of Independence somewhere. So I'm in favor of it. You're not allowed to call me an anti-Semite. I want this to be the case. And I'm happy it's happening. To close out our coverage of race, the DOJ has announced that the SPLC paid Klan members a monthly salary to stay in the KKK and recruit new members. What nonprofit would do this is sick and just sad. What were they thinking? I think I can actually explain. See, the Southern Poverty Law Center paid Klan members to stay in the KKK, according to the Department of Justice. The Southern Poverty Law Center allegedly used about $4.1 million in donor funds to pay the Ku Klux Klan members to remain in the group, reimbursing them for expenses such as cross-burning materials and two Klan garments. Why ever would the SPLC support the Klan, of all people? Maybe because the Klan is a defunct and purposeless movement that has been thoroughly discredited in the eyes of all Americans and only serves to drive people away from the cause of white solidarity or white representation. Maybe that's why. Either they actually like the KKK, or this is a pretty obvious, sophisticated, controlled opposition operation. Which is funny because you'll see newspaper articles about the SPLC funding white groups. And the New York Post, for example, I believe it was the New York Post, used a picture of Patriot Front in the article about the SPLC funding white groups. They don't fund Patriot Front. They don't fund Patriot Front. Why? Because Patriot Front is effective, are nonviolent, are actually successful and capable of making their case in a convincing way. They're extremely disciplined and don't allow their members to commit violence or, you know, even respond when violence is committed against them. They're not supporting them, are they? Who are they supporting? They're supporting the cross-burning KKK. Because the KKK is bad for white people. Things like Patriot Front, I would argue, are good. So they're not funding this like they're actually funding the KKK. They're attempting to divert any, you know, concern about the status and condition of white people in this country towards the most ineffective and reviled organizations, and then trying to tie those organizations to the new organizations that have cropped up who have, you know, legitimate grievances and effective strategies for dealing with them. There's a reason that they funded the KKK, and it's because it's the KKK. And they want that to be the face of white people. It's not that complicated. The KKK is just like the, it's just the least popular thing ever, right? In America, it's just never, it's, there's not going to be a resurgence, okay? There's not going to be a renaissance of KKK. It's just not going to happen. So they want to keep that going. So if white people are, you know, actually looking around and going, gee, it seems like my race is under attack. It seems like my people will die out if something's not done. Maybe I should get involved. What they want you to do is go towards the KKK people, who's a bunch of old boomers who do absolutely nothing but make all white people look bad. That's great. They want you going there. They don't want you being a groiper. They don't want you to follow Alex Jones Network. They don't want you supporting people and organizations that can effectively argue against this stuff, can effectively even mobilize against this stuff. They want you taken into ineffective, pointless, and hateful groups, quite frankly. So it sounds like the KKK just is the SPLC. Robert Malone says, not a single story written by progressive mainstream media on this, Ground News, an aggregate service of both left and right news, only can find numerous articles from the media on the right to source. No left-wing mainstream media news site could be bothered to write a story on this development. I wonder why, insert sarcasm. I respect Robert Malone. I get where he's coming from. He says, so what do the New York Times write about this case that the SPLC is accused, has accused the DOJ of vindictive prosecution? Not a peep about the Klan members being paid. You can't make this stuff up. The headline from New York Times, Southern Poverty Law Center accuses Justice Department of vindictive prosecution. The reason no progressives are writing about this is because they think it's a appropriate and good use of money. Like, and the thing is, I think the SPLC may be able to make that case in court. They may be able to make the case because basically what they're charged with is fraud. And the idea is that people gave to the SPLC thinking they were fighting against racism, and then they turned around and gave the money to the most racist groups in the world. Would seem like a cut and dry case, except that it's an obvious strategy and probably a successful one to keep the, you know, unpopular, stupid, ineffective programs going. I bet they can make that case. And I bet they can make the case that their donors approve of what their money was used for. So how could it be fraud? I don't know if this prosecution is going to work. I think the SPLC is going to be able to lay out, look, here was our plan. Here's why we did this. We think that, you know, we want any white person. It's like how the FBI runs Muslim sting operations, right? It's the same thing the FBI does. The FBI pays people to go in and join radical Muslim groups because they're informants. I think the SPLC is going to be able to make that case and say, look, we're just doing what police officers do and FBI agents do. We're utilizing an effective, you know, counter-racist strategy here. So I don't know if the SPLC is even going to succeed in any of this, but just know if the SPLC is funding you, it's because you're working for them. Okay. They aren't trying to create racism so that they have something to combat. They're hijacking legitimate concerns about white people being discriminated against and replaced in our homeland, and they want to morph that into the literal Klan, into cross-burning, noose-hanging type of activity. What they definitely don't want, what they are not funding, what they're doing everything in their can to stop happening, is white people getting together to be politically active in a peaceful and structured way. Who the SPLC never donates to are people like myself or Nick Fuentes or Patriot Front or any of these other groups that are, you know, being accused of being feds by people. You clearly are missing the central thing that makes organizations like the KKK so objectionable. It is the unoptical and violent and aggressive strategy that they pursue, those are the people that the SPLC funds. Really not that complicated. It's really not. We have some more information about the Kushners and Ivanka Trump and their purchase of the Albanian land and the protest against against the purchase by the Zionist elite of large portions of the Albanian coast are absolutely going out of control, and they're really, really putting us to shame, us Americans. This should be what we should be doing, because our country is being stolen to a much, much greater degree than Albania's is. Albania, thousands protest against Ivanka Trump / Jared Kushner purchasing massive private island equipped with 3,500 nuclear bunkers and miles of tunnels. Thousands of Albanians clashed with police this week during protest against an island tourist resort planned by a company linked to President Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and daughter Ivanka Trump. The $1.4 billion island of Sazan was formerly a communist-era military base with 3,500 nuclear bunkers, unexploded weapons, bomb shelters, and miles of tunnels, according to The Independent. Ivanka recently described how she and her husband came across the 1,400-acre ex-military base, saying they were on a friend's boat when they stopped for a swim and swam to the island. "We went on a hike, barefoot, all the way to the top, and we were just captivated," she explained. Glenn Greenwald commented, saying, "The most darkly funny aspect of this video is Ivanka Trump speaks as if she went on some profound, prolonged, spiritual, philosophical journey to ascertain the meaning of life and concluded the most elevated human state is to live on a gigantic private island in the Mediterranean in a sprawling mansion paid for with the billions of dollars given to her husband by the Saudis and Emiratis to ensure favorable treatment by him and her dad in the exercise of power of the American presidency." Real uplifting stuff here. Real uplifting stuff. But it could be significantly more sinister than that. After all, we know that Alexander Soros considers the president of Albania one of his best friends. We can go to the videos of some of the protests going on in Albania. Fourth night of protests in Albania against mega tourism project in a natural reserve linked to Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Protesters demand suspension and defend Albanians' land. And again, like, you got to be this way. You have to be this hardcore. They cannot get a foot in the door. Right? Because that's the way this always works. It's always like, wow, you're really freaking out about this little land deal. I mean, what's the big problem? All these other people have land deals. I notice you're not mad about that. You know, maybe you're anti-Semitic, you know? And that's always the argument, right? Oh, you care so much about Israel. I never see you talk about Qatar. Maybe it's because you have bad motivations. You're protesting Jared Kushner, but you didn't protest the other one that was elsewhere that didn't matter as much. So maybe you're an anti-Semite. Maybe that's the thing that's motivating you. And no joke, the president of Albania, the guy who's best friends with Alexander Soros and best friends with Jared Kushner, best friends with the transnational Jewish control grid, he just came out and said that the riots in Albania are being funded by Iran. They're being funded by Iran, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of an interesting tactic to take, isn't it? Why would Iran be funding protests in Albania? I think they've got other things to be concerned about. Is it possibly because selling land in Albania to the Kushners is actually a part of a Zionist plot? Is that why? Could this be because it's being bankrolled by Israel and that Iran is trying to stop it? Because I don't think Iran's actually involved. I think this is a legitimate protest from the Albanian people against part of their country being sold to a couple Israeli psychopath genociders. I don't think they need, you know, extra funding and resources and encouragement to protest that. I think it's a valuable and an appropriate response in the first place. Here they are burning the president's home. So again, it's not that there's evidence of Iran doing this. The president is saying that because he wants Israel's help in putting down his own people. And he's saying it because he knows that this is a part of a Zionist plot. And so he's blaming the Iranians for opposition. But really, that's just an unintended admission by the president. That's how I interpret it. I do not believe that Iran is funding these protests. I don't think that Albania is exactly on the top of their list, and I don't think the Albanians need extra encouragement to protest the takeover of their country. But I do think that blaming the Iranians by the Albanian president, the best friend of Alexander Soros, is very telling as to what he believes is motivating these people, which, again, you know, it's, I'm trying to think of a metaphor of just like when you, you know, you say something that just didn't, it's basically like, it's like, oh, you know, all these people are protesting you selling this pristine wetlands to foreigners. And they're like, oh, well, maybe they're anti-Semites. And it's like, what? We didn't say anything. Wait, is this a Jewish thing? You know, it's kind of like, well, wait, is that what? Oh, well, you just must hate Israel and you know, want to see them fail. And you must be an anti-Semite. It's like, well, we didn't mention Israel. We didn't mention Zion. We didn't mention anything like that. But the fact that you immediately go there tells me that that's where you're coming from. That actually is what's behind this. It's pretty interesting. Interesting inadvertent admission. Albanians did it. Israeli settlers are facing displacement. So basically they broke into the construction site where all this is going on, and they, you know, attacked the places where, yeah, this is the crowd. Wow, those Iranians are real good at putting a crowd out, huh? Gee, if they're capable of doing this in Albania, you'd think they'd do it elsewhere at some point. Nah, they only did this in Albania, and only to stop Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump from building a private island paradise. Crazy how that happens, huh? If they can get a crowd of a million people out on Albanian streets, but haven't bothered to do it anywhere else. Huh. Wonder why they would choose Albania. If we can go to this video, Albanian, and obviously this has been translated, so it's not exact, but he says, Albanian did it. Albanians did it. Israeli settlers facing displacement. Time for us to free Seaport, Camps Bay, Stellenbosch. Israeli settlers must leave. They must go back to Ukraine. And so there's these, you know, temporary shelters for the construction workers. And basically Albania is like, no, we know what this is. These are Israeli settlements. No, we know what's happening in the West Bank. We know how it starts. You know, oh, we're just going to set up some temporary shelters. We're actually, it's going to bring you, you know, economic benefit. What, you don't want Albania to benefit economically? You don't want them to have a new $1 billion, you know, private island paradise? This is for you. It's going to benefit you. Of course. So I guess this was in South Africa. Are they doing it in South Africa too? Yeah, Israel's colonizing the world. I mean, y'all are seeing this, right? Argentina, Greece, Albania, apparently South Africa, Thailand. They've already got a place in Russia, an oblast all to themselves. Obviously, Ukraine is being cleansed out, except for the Jews that live there. Yeah, I think they're building colonies. I think that's just what this is. Now, interestingly, the area that this is being built looks like they're trying to set up a situation in which Israel owns basically every strait, every, you know, passageway through the oceans. Because if we go to Dotcam here, Kushner, Trump's Zionist son-in-law, buys a coast in Albania. Then on the opposite coast, Israelis are buying land in Puglia. Some say it will become a strait all in the hands of the Israelis. Conspiracy theorists say that. Albanians are at least protesting. Italy is not. So apparently Israel is buying land here and the Kushners are buying land here. Nothing suspicious about that. They definitely aren't trying to take over a strait. Certainly has nothing to do with that. How dare you? What are you, anti-Semitic? They just loved the land.
Plug for about 90 seconds at the end of the first hour. Didn't plug any last hour. And I'd raise that point. I'd say, oh, not good. I didn't plug. It's bad. I didn't plug. But I didn't want to interrupt that guest. That's how we fund this operation. If I just plugged twice an hour, we've done the math, we'd have plenty of funds around this place. And I can then hire more crew, more stuff. But I don't do it. So we're almost in the red again. So be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny. And the products really work because we want to sell you something that is going to be great, that's good for you, that blows you away. So you go, man, that Alex Jones was right again. Not just about what he covers and says, but the products. Our T3 iodine is not instant gratification. It takes about 2 weeks on average for it to kick in. It is the missing link. Most people are iodine deficient. The iodine that's in the environment, most of it's bound, meaning it's not atomic. It's not pure on the periodic table. It is bound to a whole bunch of other stuff, and you don't absorb it properly. This is atomic iodine. It does everything. Now, again, you die without oxygen in 4 minutes. Everybody knows this. 4 minutes without oxygen, the average person's dead. Some people quicker. Without water, you die in about 4 days. Out in the desert today, most people die in about 45 days without food. Now, why is that? Because the food has the vitamins and minerals in it. And I know I'm talking to you like you're 5 years old. I know most of you get this, but for others that don't. Iodine, you can look it up, is one of the essential elements that without iodine, you die. Now, in the 1920s, they noticed about a 15-20 point IQ reduction, particularly in the Midwest, and massive spikes nationwide of child deformities, birth defects. And they did a bunch of big government studies and found that people that lived on coastal cities and that ate a lot of fish had higher IQs and basically almost no deformities. And they went, oh, it's the iodine. So they started putting a cheap form that's bound, but you still get some of it, but sodium fluoride, I think someone, in the salts. When I was a kid, it still said Morton salts, iodine added. You know, the little girl with the umbrella, and it says when it rains, it pours. This is the super version of that. Just a few drops a day. It takes 2 weeks on average to kick in for the average person. And your skin, your stamina, your libido. I remember, like, gosh, time flies, like 18 years ago or something, I met Dr. Edward Grubb, really smart guy, total visionary. And he said, listen, you need to start taking atomic iodine. And he'd come out with the only one. And he said, you should sell this private label. And I said, okay. He said, you know, you got some of those sunspots on your face. And I was like 38 then or so. And I didn't have bad skin, but I did have some sunspots, brown spots and stuff that weren't freckles. You know, I call them liver spots. And he said, all this other stuff will happen, your libido, everything. He goes, it's about 2 weeks for it to kick in. And right at about the 2 week mark of the average person, you'll kind of feel crappy for a day or two. It's not like you have a cold or the flu, but you feel kind of groggy and tired. That's when it shifts in the cells, the mitochondria. And then a lot of toxins will get pushed out. You might even break out or something. But he said, after that, you'll feel incredible. 2 weeks later, I go, man, I feel like crap today. I have no energy. Lasts about a day. And then when I woke up the next day after feeling sick the day before, it was like I'd been carrying, you know, one of my kids on my shoulders. I'd carry them until they were like 5 or 6. Sometimes it'd be exhausting, but you take them off your shoulders, it feels so good. That's what it felt like. You're insane if you don't get this, and it funds our operation. And I only sell stuff that works, but it's not instant gratification. 2 weeks. Now be careful with it. Talk to your physician before, because you've got some different thyroid issues that can cause problems. In most cases, it helps, but you talk to your physicians. This isn't a game. And so there's a small percentage of people that can do some weird stuff. So be careful. I'm not selling placebo here. I only sell stuff that kick you like a mule in a good way. Be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Gal syndrome from a tick on my ankle. Chemtrails overhead while the skyline tangles. Glyphosate dinners in the microwave tray. Talking to the checkout robot every damn day. Microplastics drift through the blood in my veins. Politicians smile while they chemically rain. Barcode babies in a cashless state. Everybody says relax while they seal in our fate. Television doctors push another new pill. 5 side effects deep, but they say just chill. Corn syrup cocktails and fluorescent cheese. Drones in the clouds while they map the trees. Wi-Fi towers hum through the side of my skull. World keeps spinning, but the vibe feels dull. Synthetic meat sizzling black on the grate. End times buffet at the digital gate. New world order on the television screen. Smoke in the sky where the satellites gleam. Everybody march to the barcode gate. Whole world glitching in a digital state.
Absolutely brilliant. I think that's the best work he's ever done. That was Wars of the Info on X. I thought that was fantastic. Honestly, right? I think I like that more than anything else he's ever done. Wars of the Info on X. Follow him now. He does come out with a lot of good stuff. It's hard to say. It's hard to say what the best is, but yeah, he got it. He got it right. So we're talking about Albania. And the Kushner's very suspicious purchase there. And, you know, it reminds me a lot of the ballroom. You know, this ballroom that Donald Trump is building where it's just like, oh, it's going to be a beautiful ballroom. It's so nice. And we need a ballroom. We need a ballroom to do big events, don't we? Don't you want a big ballroom to do events in? And then it's like, oh, by the way, we need billions of dollars because we're building a sophisticated bunker underneath. That's actually going to be a command and control center for the new AI digital panopticon. So what do you mean you don't want a ballroom? You don't want a place for people to dance? We're just going to dance there. What's wrong with you, right? It's very much the same vibe. Like, what? It's a beautiful island. We're going to have a private resort. There's going to be water slides, okay? Sure, we're buying it at a, you know, formerly, you know, Cold War era nuclear bunker site, but that's what was available. I don't know what to tell you. And yeah, it kind of does happen to be right across a thin piece of water from another land that the Israelis are buying. What a coincidence that is. What a crazy coincidence. But don't look into it at all. Okay. It's a fun paradise island extravaganza. All right. Stop looking into it already. Would you? I'm a little bit suspicious. I'm a little bit suspicious at the Rothschilds and the Kushners going on a little jaunt around the islands and happen to fall in love with this beautiful, magical military island. Isn't it amazing? From AlexJonesLive.com, you can go to AlexJonesLive.com to find this story. From Kellen McBreen, Albania, thousands protest against Ivanka Trump / Jared Kushner purchasing massive private island equipped with 3,500 nuclear bunkers and miles of tunnels. Kushner revealed in a recent podcast that he privately met with Albania's socialist prime minister Edi Rama aboard the Rothschild's boat in 2021, leading him to later discover the island for the project. And that's kind of nice, too, isn't it? Knowing that in 2021, when the rest of us were locked down in our homes watching grandma die through a sheet of plexiglass, that Jared Kushner was having in-person meetings on a yacht in Albania. Isn't that nice? Isn't that fun? It's especially nice and fun because of how he was responsible for the lockdowns in the first place. As this story from brownstone.org notes, the possibility of U.S. lockdowns, never attempted on this scale in the history of pandemics, was already in the air early March 2020. The theory of lockdown had been floating around for 15 years, but now China was the first to try it, and they claimed it was an enormous success, fraudulently. Incredibly, the U.S. was set to try it out, but getting Trump on board was going to take some doing. The federal government had the quarantine power since 1944, that much we knew, but just how expansive could its exercise be? Would they dare quarantine the well along with the sick? How far would this go? Thanks to several journalistic accounts, we have a better idea of what went on in the White House before that dreadful March 16th, 2020 press conference of Donald Trump, Anthony Fauci, and Deborah Birx, in which the lockdowns were announced. Along with that came a flyer with the tiny print about which the ever-trusting Trump apparently knew nothing. Bars, restaurants, food courts, gyms, and other indoor and outdoor venues where groups of people congregate should be closed. Read those words again. Has anything like this ever been issued by any government in the history of the world before China did it? I cannot think of a case. It shuts not only the places where people do congregate, but also everywhere they might congregate. Churches, AA meetings, civic clubs, libraries, museums, homes. And all this happened under Trump's watch right here in the U.S. There ought to be a word to describe something more extreme than totalitarian. There were a number of people in Trump's circle in those days who proved panicked and confused enough to embrace the idea, but precisely who wrote those words in the sheet handed out to reporters? We cannot say for sure, but Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner played an important role. He had enlisted two close friends from college to help, Nat Turner and Adam Bowler. Both were graduates from the Wharton School like Trump. Jared somehow believed they knew something about pandemics because they worked in healthcare delivery, so he called them. Bowler headed the $60 billion U.S. International Development Finance Corporation and still does. It's one of those many agencies that throws contracts and cash to big shots within the industry. Before that job, he was head of Landmark Health Delivery Services, which means that he knew business and finance, not public health. He's among those high finance execs that were drawn to healthcare not for the science, but for the money. As for Turner, he was a serial entrepreneur who got his start selling snakes from his parents' garage, truly. He founded an ad agency that eventually was sold to Google 10 years ago, Invite Media, for more than $70 million. His company, Flatiron, oncology-related electronic recording software, sold to Roche in 2018 for $1.9 billion. His page on the Wharton School describes him as young, entrepreneurial, and Google-owned. He's now a billionaire investor at an implausibly young age, and he's Google-owned. The book Nightmare Scenario 2021 explains what happened next. On March 13th, 2020, Bowler and Turner burrowed into a room in the basement of the West Wing and started calling people who grasped both the scale of the crisis but also the politics. over the weekend, they were putting together recommendations that then circulated them with Birx and Fauci. The guidelines were refined farther before being presented to Trump in the Oval Office. They wanted to recommend shutting down in-person education at schools, closing indoor dining at restaurants and bars, canceling travel. Birx and Fauci saw the guidelines as a crucial pause that would buy them some time to better understand the pandemic. Shutting down flights was not enough, they said. More would have to be done. Bowler, Kushner, Birx, Fauci, and other aides presented Trump with the recommendation several days later, anxious over what he might say. Kushner had been preparing Trump for the possibility that they were going to need to take more draconian actions. The account is not speculative. Kushner himself explained in his new book, "On my way to the White House early the next morning, March 12th, my billionaire investor brother Josh called from New York City. He described the worrisome signs. The city had canceled its annual St. Patrick's Day parade. Thousands of people were self-quarantining, and millions were leaving the city. When I told him that I was asked to jump into the response, he made a suggestion. You should call Adam. Why not call, for example, a public health scientist, somebody with expertise in viruses, a medical doctor? Universities are packed with them. Somebody, anybody with actual knowledge or experience? Nope. It was entirely a crony operation. Privileged fools about to take over the private lives of hundreds of millions of people. By the way, I want to note, how did he put it? Privileged fools. They're privileged fools with no authority in the federal government, who nobody ever voted for, who had no right to make these decisions on behalf of anybody, let alone everybody. They're literally just random dudes that happen to be familiarly associated with Donald Trump. Like, Kushner has been the engine behind so much of what's wrong with Donald Trump. It's actually pathetic that it's that way. This Adam guy, this Nate guy, they're literally just friends of Kushner, who's just the husband of the president's wife. And for some reason, these people got to dictate the shutdown procedure. And by the way, Deborah Birx, in her book and in interviews she's given, she admits that the strategy was, because Trump didn't want to do the lockdown. He didn't think the lockdown was a good idea. So they convinced him it would only be 2 weeks. That's what the 2 weeks to slow the spread thing was. That was, yes, to get Americans to go along with it, just like in my, you know, skit where it's like, it's only 2 weeks. Yeah, it's not going to go on forever. Definitely not. It's definitely not going to go on for all summer. We're definitely not using this as a way to get our foot in the door, and then we'll expand it every week for the next 60 weeks until we've been in lockdown for a year and we're able to use the lockdown in order to justify the mail-in ballots. That definitely isn't our plan the entire time. They say it was the plan. Deborah Birx says we wanted to shut down indefinitely, but Trump would never go for it. So we convinced him that it would only be 2 weeks. We were able to convince him, like, okay, if it's only 2 weeks, I guess we can do it, knowing full well that they would extend the 2 weeks immediately, which is exactly what they did. And then they go and brag about this as if this was a clever strategy for doing it, for, you know, convincing this, you know, stupid, out of touch Trump to do what they needed to. That's literally how they present it, as if Trump is this, like, you know, idiot that can't understand and can't be reasoned with. So they have to trick him. They had to lie to him. And actually, it was a righteous lie. It was a beneficial lie because it got lockdown, which saved all everybody's lives. It's just lie upon lie upon lie, obviously. So Jared Kushner and his two billionaire buddies from school, who, you know, they must be great entrepreneurs, right? They must be. I mean, what a coincidence, right? What a crazy coincidence that, like, Jared Kushner, the son of, like, highly connected Zionist billionaires, just happens to become a billionaire himself through realty trades. Like, I guess the genius is inherited. And he just happens to be lifelong friends with people who also just so happen to become billionaires by their mid-20s. That's crazy. Isn't that crazy how talented and successful all these guys are? Certainly, it has nothing to do with a, you know, ethnic mafia benefiting their fellow Jews. That's racist. That's anti-Semitic to say that. No, they're all brilliant geniuses. And yes, they care that much about health that not only are they going to force everybody in America to stay on lockdown, they're going to remove themselves entirely. They're not even going to be here. They're going to quarantine so hard, they're going to do it on a yacht in the Mediterranean. So that's how dedicated they were to the sacrifice being made. Is that while you had to watch your grandmother die through a sheet of glass because the lockdown procedures they designed, They were meanwhile meeting in person with presidents of Albania in between the swimming excursions off the coast of Albania on Nathan Rothschild's yacht. So isn't that interesting? So in 2021, when all of us were under lockdown, lockdown designed and pushed by Kushner, Kushner himself was making this deal in Albania, along with George Soros' son and the Rothschilds. It's almost like we're identifying the members of this international Jewish mafia, isn't it? Kind of like that. What is Jared Kushner actually building on Sazan Island? This is from tomelliott.substack.com. On the second night of June 2026, several thousand Albanians took to the streets of Tirana, the capital of Albania, blocking traffic and chanting, "Albania is not for sale." Their immediate target was Prime Minister Edi Rama. Their actual target was a $1.4 billion resort development on Sazan Island, a 1,400-hectare strip of land at the mouth of the Vlor Bay, or Vlori Bay, that was, until recently, a top-secret military zone studded with 3,600 nuclear bunkers and half-century-old Soviet submarine base. Oh, well, that's what you want on your private island, a submarine base. Kind of like the submarine base Jeffrey Epstein's island had, right? Remember how Ghislaine Maxwell was a submarine operator? Remember that? They're just adventurous. They're just adventurous folks. What can we say? They just love a good adventure, you know? I don't know if you're thinking that having access to a submarine port would mean that you could clandestinely ship people or goods anywhere in the world, if that would ever be utilized for evil. Not by these people, all right? Not by the Kushners, not by the Maxwells, okay? These are the best of the best. These are our most moral and upstanding citizens that we've ever had, okay? And if you don't think so, have fun in the gulag, all right? It's illegal to say that. We'll be soon. The American developer behind the project is a firm called Atlantic Incubation Partners LLC, affiliated with Jared Kushner's private equity vehicle Affinity Partners, Albania's special prosecution office against corruption and organized crime, known as SPAK, has opened a formal investigation into the land reclassifications that cleared the way. Most of the international coverage is focused on the optics, Ivanka Trump describing Sazan as a private island the family had discovered. The Aman Resorts branding, the flamingos and Mediterranean monk seals in the adjacent Narta wetlands, the Trump Island jokes on The Daily Show. The optics are bad, but they're also a distraction. The interesting questions are these. Why, of all the post-government opportunities available to former White House advisor, did Jared Kushner choose a strategically located former military island honeycombed with Cold War tunnels? Who introduced him to it? Where is the money coming from? And given who his introducer is and who the introducer's social circle is, should anybody be entirely comfortable with the luxury eco-resort pitch at face value? The answers, as far as they go, are documented. Kushner told the All In podcast that he discovered the island while on vacation aboard the yacht of his friend Nathaniel Rothschild, and that he later met privately with Edi Rama aboard the same yacht to begin discussions. Affinity Partners' principal known investor is the Saudi Public Investment Fund, which wired Kushner $2 billion in 2021 over the objections of its own screening committee. And Nate Rothschild's documented social network, the people he has worked with, sued, sailed with, and been photographed with for at least two decades, overlaps in non-trivial ways with the social network that ran Jeffrey Epstein's last decade. Yeah, they're... This is not a piece arguing that Kushner is building Epstein's island. It's a piece arguing that the network around Kushner is harder to dismiss than the press has been willing to dismiss it so far. Sazan is unlike any other piece of land currently being marketed to tourists in the Mediterranean. Beneath the vine and fig trees lie roughly 3,600 one-man nuclear bunkers and kilometers of tunnels and underground facilities, including a cinema, a school, and a hospital. Smithsonian Magazine, covering the island's first opening to tourism that same year, described an intact network of bunkers and tunnels used by Cold War soldiers. The Soviet Union maintained a whiskey-class submarine base there in the late 1950s, and Western open-source reporting has long alleged a chemical weapons facility, although no party has officially confirmed it. For most of the 20th century, the island was strictly off limits to civilians. It opened limited to tourism in 2015. In December 2024, the Albanian government declassified the island for civilian development. Atlanta Incubation Partners Kushner Vehicle was named Strategic Investor, a designation that allows expedited permits, fast-tracking environmental review, and a bundle of incentives unavailable to ordinary applicants. The developer scope, as reported by the Albanian and international press, is enormous. As many as 10,000 hotel rooms and villas spread across the island in adjacent coastal areas. Restoration and adaptive reuse of the Cold War-era military structures, a marina, and Amman Resorts-managed flagship hotel and perimeters that would include parts of the lagoon and ecologically protected wetlands that serves as a stopover from migrating flamingos and a habitat for monk seals and sea turtles. Again, you know, he's just connecting the Rothschilds to this, the SPAK investigation into it. A billionaire Rothschild heir owns the Explorer superyacht, so cool it was featured in Christopher Nolan's blockbuster. Now he's selling it for $87 million. The five-decker vessel boasts a helipad, an observation lounge, a cinema, and an opulent owner's deck. Wasn't that nice for him? His public record is colorful. In 2008, Rothschild hosted then-EU Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson and then-Shadow Chancellor George Osborne separately aboard the mega-yacht of Russian aluminum oligarch Oleg Deripaska off Corfu, a scandal that produced a parliamentary inquiry in London, a public quarrel between Rothschild and Osborne in the press, and eventually a libel suit by Rothschild against the Daily Mail's parent company over its coverage of the Mandelson visit. Mandelson, of course, who was forced to resign because he had been providing insider information to Jeffrey Epstein and that his connections to the Epstein crime syndicate were covered up during his review, and he was allowed to take the positions despite the connections he had actually making him ineligible for the role. Deripaska, for the record, is sanctioned by the United States, the United Kingdom, and the European Union. It's widely described in open-source reporting as Putin's oligarch. He's the same Deripaska who employed Paul Manafort as a political consultant in the 2000s and who featured prominently in the Mueller report as the recipient of Manafort's offer for private briefings during the 2016 campaign. Rothschild's commercial career had been similar to had been similarly Russia adjacent. His investment vehicle Valar PLC, located on the London Stock Exchange in 2010, eventually became Bumi PLC in a reverse merger with the Indonesian Bakri family's coal interests, a transaction that collapsed in acrimony, litigation, and a near total wipeout of public shareholders. He has been an investment in the EN Plus Group, Deripaska's hydroelectric and aluminum holding company. He's also spent the last decade quietly building holdings in Montenegro, Albania's coastal neighbor, where he holds citizenship. The pattern across two decades of public reporting is consistent. Rothschild as the man whose yacht the politicians are on, whose planes they are on, whose Adriatic compound they are on. He is the broker as well as the host. The pattern is so well established that the Albanian press, in covering the Sazan deal, has not had to invent any framing for it. They simply restated what Kushner told the All In podcast. Here's where the DOJ Epstein file release intersects with the Sazan story. Nathaniel Rothschild does not appear in Jeffrey Epstein's flight logs. He does not appear in the so-called Black Book by first name. What he does appear in repeatedly is the email correspondence of Peter Mandelson, Rothschild's close friend, one of Kushner's indirect predecessors in the role of the politician on Deripaska's yacht, and one of Jeffrey Epstein's documented intimates from 2002. Through at least 2011. The Mandelson-Epstein emails released by the House Oversight Committee in November 2025 and reinforced by the DOJ release in December are now a matter of public record. They span a decade. They show Mandelson seeking Epstein's advice on his post-government career, gossiping with Epstein about mutual acquaintances, accepting Epstein's hospitality, and, most relevant here, using Epstein as a back channel to help Nate Rothschild, or Nat Rothschild. It feels wrong calling him a Nat. Right? Gnats are annoying little bugs. We'll call them tick. We'll call them tick. That's an annoying blood-sucking animal, so maybe more appropriate. Tick Rothschild does not appear in Jeffrey Epstein's flight logs. The Mandelson-Epstein emails released by the House Oversight Committee in November 2025 and reinforced by the DOJ release in December are now a matter of public record. They span a decade. They show Mandelson seeking Epstein's advice. Oh, I just read that. In April 2010, Mandelson forwarded Epstein an email he had written to Jez Staley, then a senior executive at J.P. Morgan. The forwarded message read in part, "I've been following my friend Tick Rothschild's plan to list a vehicle on the LSE, and I'm very happy JPM are now planning to get involved in bookrunners alongside Credit Suisse." Mandelson was, by his own admission to Epstein, using their relationship to help promote the Rothschild's London listing, the Valar vehicle that would later become Bumi. Epstein's reply, captured in the release files, is characteristic. "You are so devious." Epstein understood exactly what he was reading. Mandelson laundering a favor for the Rothschild through an Epstein-adjacent banker. Now, the more I learn about these guys, the less I trust them. The more I learn about this Epstein guy, the less I'm convinced he's this, great guy. I don't know. I mean, you start off thinking these Epsteins, the Rothschilds, they're so rich. They're so powerful. They must be amazing people. They must be great and amazing and accomplished people to be, you know, driving around on billion-dollar yachts, meeting with every president. You know, they must be so impressive, and everybody seems to love them so much. And then you read about them, you're like, I don't think these guys are so great after all. I'm starting to think these guys aren't the good guys after all. These might actually be the heart of darkness. These people might actually be the source and engine of all the problems in the world, actually. Now that I'm paying attention, it almost seems like the world would be a stable and happy place without the Jeffrey Epstein, Kushner, Soros, Rothschild cabal meddling in everything and having control of everything and lying about everything and manipulating everyone. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Here you are thinking these billionaires have our best interests in mind. Here we are just, you know, under the assumption that these massive international billionaires are working for the betterment of society and to progress humanity in love and peace. But, you know, the more I read, the less I'm convinced that that's the case. Okay? The more you learn about these people, the less you like them. This goes on and on. But again, that's just, and I got to encourage you to go to Substack. This is Tom Elliott, tomelliott.substack.com. I just read the first two pages verbatim, almost three, but it goes on for at least another five or six pages. And it connects, you know, all these people and their various nefarious activities with the purchase of this island, which is obviously some sort of cover up for some sort of Israeli activity. And yeah, I didn't realize they were doing it in South Africa, too. So just off the top of my head, we've got the islands in Greece, the islands in Albania, the coastal land of Italy, all being purchased in large amounts by Israel, often, you know, former military compound places. Obviously, they're taking over Syria. Obviously, they're taking over Lebanon and Gaza. But they're also apparently making agreements with the Argentinian government to allow a quote unquote mini Israel to exist in Patagonia. They also obviously have entire communities in places like New Jersey here, as exposed by Tyler Oliveira. But, you know, they also have an entire oblast in Russia that they run. Ukraine essentially is theirs to run roughshod with. They're also apparently building colonies in Thailand that the people there are not very happy about. It feels to me like the Israelis are literally setting up colonies all over the world, and they're doing it with American power and money and European, you know, power and money behind them. But I don't think it's for us. I don't. I think it's for them. I think they're evil. I think they're bad. I think they need to be stopped by all means necessary. That's about going to do it for us here this week on War Room Live. Follow us, of course, on Rumble, rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive. We are on X at AJN Live. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. That's how they know who sent you. And we'll see you next Monday. Have a good weekend. Your arm been hacked off by a homeless person with a samurai sword? Try Shilajit gummies today.
A guy in Venice Beach just got his arm nearly hacked off by some tweaker with a samurai sword. And as of 4:15, he is still on the loose. And seemingly, the reaction from our local government is basically like, oh, shit, like, these things just happen. Like, this is our new normal. F that, dude. I want to live in an LA that is safe to go out, where I don't have to worry about walking around and getting my arm hacked off by some tweaker looking for drugs.
Sorry, I ate a Shilajit gummy. Sorry, I thought I could finish it before that clip was over. You caught me. Shilajit gummies, folks. We're not joking. They're very good. Shilajit gummies. Are you a leftist idiot that thinks it's normal that men get their arms chopped off with swords when trying to go to the beach in California? Shilajit gummies are for you. Consumers of Shilajit gummies, they know places to avoid. If you want to avoid having your arm nearly cut off by a sword in Venice Beach, California, you need to be taking Shilajit gummies today. I do love these things. They are really delicious, but they really do give you a kick. And you only get to take one. This is the worst part of Shilajit gummies, is you want to take multiple,
but you're only supposed to take one. You can take more if you want. Also, I love the Modern World Survival Stack. A massive discount if you get three products together. It's the Shilajit capsules, the Atomic Defense, and the CMOS capsules, which are packed with vitamins, minerals to support overall wellness, thyroid health, and immune function. The Atomic Defense is for daily defense and cellular support, while Shilajit capsules support natural energy, stamina, and daily vitality. Get one or all of them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Share the links at alexjoneslive.com and on Rumble at thealexjonesshowlive.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.